ॐ पार्थाय प्रतिबोधितां भगवता नारायणेन स्वयं व्यासेन ग्रथितां पुराणमुनिना मध्ये महाभारतम् अद्वैतामृतवर्षिणीं भगवतीं अष्टादशाध्यायिनीम् अम्बत्वामनुसन्धाने भगवद्गीते भवद्वेषिणी. One verse 8. Yeah. Rasoham abhisukanteya. Rasoham abhisukanteya. Prabhasmi shashi surya yoho. Prabhasmi shashi surya yoho. Pranavas sarva vedeshu. Pranavas sarva vedeshu shabdakhe paurusham rishu shabdakhe paurusham rishu rasaha aham apsu kaunteya prabha asmi shashi suryayoho pranavaha sarva vedeshu shabdaha ke Parusham Rishu. So up to this point, Bhagavan has been talking about himself as being twofold, having a twofold prakriti, right? The upper prakriti is that lower prakriti, which is the whole Maya Upadhi, right? And then the para prakriti, the upper, the superior, the exalted prakriti, which is Brahman. So these are the twofold prakriti. The first prakriti, this apara prakriti, is what Swamiji is unfolding as the upadana karna, the material cause, which is subject to modification. There's two types of material cause, right? When we talk about this creation, there's two types of material cause. One is the Maya Upadhi, the Sattva Rajas Maya Upadhi, which made the Sattva Rajas Tamas, that's responsible for the manifestation of all names and forms, manifestation of this creation. That Maya, that prakriti, is also Upadana Karana, in the sense of that's what's responsible for this manifestation of duality. So that type of upadana karana, that type of prakriti, he's calling as parinama. It's something, it's a material cause that goes through modification. And that's the Maya Upadhi. This creation is nothing but modification. It's always in a process of change. And then there's what they call the para prakriti. They call vivarta upadana karana. That vivarta upadana karana is that material cause which doesn't go through any modification whatsoever to become this creation. So there's no becoming. There's no becoming for that vivarta upadana karana. So that means that which is the material cause, but which goes through no modification whatsoever to become the effect. And so really, what we see then for the vivarta upadana karana is that this creation has for its being Brahman, which has never undergone any change whatsoever. So the very set chit that this creation enjoys, the consciousness, the being, the existence, that is stable and free from change. And that you are. That's what he's revealing to Arjuna. It is that para prakriti, that my para prakriti, which is you, which you are. The upara prakriti, the lower prakriti, this manifestation of the creation, you are a part of that. Your body, mind, sense organs are part of that total manifestation. So I am in fact, this is what he's moving into now, I am in fact the warp of and woof. So what they call ota and prota, both the vertical lines and the horizontal lines and any type of fabric. I'm the very warp and woof in two ways. Both as the vivarta upadana karana, I'm the very being that everything in this creation enjoys the existence, the being, that everything enjoys. I'm the warp and woof in terms of the set chit. I am the consciousness which the entire creation enjoys, either as being known. Known is also consciousness, right? If this thing is known, then it enjoys consciousness, the consciousness of being known. From the standpoint of the Atma or of the Jiva, the mind enjoys the sense of knowership. That's also both knower and known. You know, also enjoy consciousness. I am the very consciousness which both the knower and known enjoy. So just to make that clear just for a minute. In reference to my mind, right? For any of these objects to be known, anything that I know, any object that's known, that object is forming a vritti, a thought modification in my mind. In other words, if I see that painting there, that painting I'm seeing through my eyes, it's forming a thought modification in my mind, which allows it to be known because I illumine that thought modification. Consciousness illumines that thought modification. Any thought you have, consciousness illumines it. If I identify with the mind, right, which we call the chittabhasa, that which reflects consciousness, just the sattva, the mind itself, then I become a knower. The ahankara will later say, I am a knower. And so now consciousness is labeled as a knower from the standpoint of the mind. The same consciousness is labeled as the known from the standpoint of the object in the mind. So any object that is known, right, that consciousness then gets the label of known. The one who knows the object from the standpoint of the mind, so subject-object, gets the label of knower. But in reality, what's happening there is one mind is illumined by one consciousness. One vritti, say, a vritti, a thought modification, is illumined by one consciousness. And that one consciousness from the standpoint of the vritti can get divided up into knower, knowing, and known. The knower is when I'm identifying with the mind itself, the consciousness that is reflected in the mind, then I become the knower. If I'm identifying with the sense organ, right, if I'm identifying consciousness with the act of knowing, right, then I become the knowing, right, the act of knowing that will involve a sense organ, or if it's just the mind, like a memory or an imagination, it'll just be the mind is knowing. And then if I identify with the object, if I identify consciousness with the object, that becomes the known. But in reality, the consciousness is both, it's the knower, it is the knowing, it is the known. Right? It's just how we label that consciousness from the standpoint of the upadhi. That's what gives us this knower, knowing, known duality. You smell that sort of...
Yeah.
It's really kind of bothering me. It's like
chocolate.
No, there's something in the. To me, it smells like bleach. And I have to open the door. There's a bleach smell in something.
Hope it's not outside. Yeah.
I don't smell it.
You don't have something. You just make sure it has something on it. I do, but it doesn't smell
bleach. Yeah,
No, he smells cigarettes. Yeah, somebody's smoking.
Maybe this window seems to be closed.
No. We're okay. I'm sorry about that. Sometimes that stuff enters into my mind and I can't do anything except act on it. Okay. So, when we're talking about the Vivarta Upadana Karana, it's that consciousness which is really pervasive to every experience that we have in the creation, either knower, knowing, and known. That consciousness is, there's nothing in your experience that's away from it. It's a good meditation, in fact, is to just sit with your experience, like just the experience of this room is enough, to just sit with your experience. And recognize, you take yourself, the ego, the ahankar, takes yourself to be the conscious being. But in fact, you can, that's fine, you take yourself to be the conscious being, but in fact, there's not anything in your experience that's away from consciousness, because the entire experience, including the wall and the room, including your body, including your sense organs, including the mind, all are in consciousness. There is no experience that's separate or away from consciousness. So we can say, it's a matter, Tibby. We can say that everything is known. Everything is known. That is the warp and woof, the consciousness warp and woof. There's nothing away from that. We can also say that everything is. There's nothing in our experience that's away from isness, from the chit, from the sat. And so the sat, being itself, is the warp and woof. So there, from the Vivarta Upadana Karana, that Prakriti, that Para Prakriti, I am the warp and woof of all experience. Then also, on another level, from the Upada Prakriti, from this lower Prakriti, that's responsible for the manifestation of the whole creation, I am the warp and woof of all of that. There is nothing in this creation that is not held together by the pervasiveness of my loss. So in that way, as Ishwara, as the Maya Upadhi, I am also the warp and woof, the essence of the very being of the entire creation. So both from terms of Parinama, the material cause that is going through modifications, the Maya Upadhi, and from the standpoint of my own being, I am what is running through, I am the one that runs through the whole thing. And so now he wants to get some examples of that. So he says, Rasaha aham apsu. I am the rasa, I am the taste in the waters. Now just from the standpoint of Ishwara, the Maya Upadhi, I am the rasa, you know, I am the very rasa in the waters. It means I am the essence of the waters, Ekaunteya. Prabha asmi shashi suryayoho. I am the prabha, I am the light, the luminosity in the sun and the moon. So again, just going to the very essence of these objects. What is the substance? What is actually here? In terms of the Maya Upadhi also, what is here in terms of these objects? I am what fills them. I am what fills them. Then he says, Pranavaha Sarva Vedeshu. I am the Pranava. Pranava is the name for Om. In all of the Vedas, I am Om. So it says the Om, the A-U-M, and Brahman. The A is the waking state. U is the Sukshma Sharira, the subtle state. M is the causal Karana Sharira. On both the total level and on the individual level, that A, U, M silences Brahman. So Om, the whole Vedas is an expression of the Omkara. The Omkara is the name for the Vedas. Right? So he says, it's well known, I am the Om, I am Om in all of the Vedas. So all of the Vedas themselves resolve into the Om. Then he says, Shabdaha Ke. I am the sound, I am sound in space. Because shabda, sound, is considered to be the guna, the quality of space. Space, sound travels through space. It's the only way that sound can move, sound can be known. So sound is considered to be the very quality and manifestation of space. So he says, in the space, I am the sound. I am the what manifests in the space. Then he says, Paurusham Mrishu. In the human beings, I am the humanity. I am the humanness. I am what makes a human being human. I am the humanity in the human being. And then he goes on. We're just going to go through this. Punyo kanda prithivyamcha. Punyo kanda prithivyamcha. Tejas chasmi vibhavaso. Tejas chasmi vibhavaso. Jivanam sarva bhuteshu, jivanam sarva bhuteshu, tapaschasmi tapaswishu, tapaschasmi tapaswishu. Punyaha gandaha prativyancha, tejaha cha asmi vibhavaso, jivanam sarva bhuteshu, tapaha cha asmi tapaswishu. Says, Punyaha Gandaha Prithivyamcha. I am the sweet, Punyaha means sweet, scent, the sweetness that comes from punya. I am the sweet scent in the earth. Gandha, scent, is considered to be the guna of the earth, the quality of the earth, just like shabda is the quality of the space. So I am the scent which is sweet in the earth. Why sweet? Because there's bad scent also. It's because sweet is the punya. Punya gandha means a sweet, pleasurable scent. Because in Shankara says in his Bhasha, the negative scent, smelly scents, are adharma. They're manifestations of adharma. So Ishwara, that from Ishwara, the natural scent of the earth is sweet. It's not spoiled, it's sweet. And so I am that scent in the earth which by its nature is naturally sweet. Then he says, Tejas asmi vibhavasa. I am the tejas, I am the brilliance and the heat. In vibhavasa is in the fire. Vibhavasi is fire. So I am the tejas and the heat and the brilliance in the fire. Then he says, Jivanam sarvabhuteshu. I am the life force. I am that which gives life. Jivanam is that which is life-giving. In all creatures, sarvabhuteshu, in all of the creatures, I am the life in all of the creatures. And tepas cha asmi tepas swishu. I am the tepas in all of the tepaswis. Tepas means that determinative capacity that allows me to maintain a discipline. That's the tepas. The strength that allows me to maintain a discipline. The energy or the power, the energy that I have that allows me to be resolute. So that what allows me to do tepas, what allows the tepas win to do austerities, to practice disciplines, I am that resoluteness, that strength, that energy that is to be found in the tepasvi. And so many tepas is not an easy thing. For a person to do tepas, it means that they are disciplining themselves for an extended period of time, certain types of tepas like that. And it's not something that you can is taken for granted. So right? That he's acknowledging tepas and the tepasvi, and he's saying, and I am that. Because a jiva can say, you know, I'm doing this and I'm doing that. I am the tepasvi. And he said, no, I am the tepas and the tepasvi. These are all my laws. These are all my capacities. These capacities exist in the universe. It is innate in every human being. You, this particular jiva may be manifesting that tepas. But the tepas that jiva is manifesting is me. Those are my laws. That's my manifestation. You're not manifesting anything that is not myself, because I am anything that can be manifest, that is myself, and I'm all of the laws involved. So I am the tejas, and I am the tepas and the tepasvi. Then he says, Bijam mam sarvabhutanam, Bijam mam sarvabhutanam. Vidhi Paritha Sanatanam, Vidhi Paritha Sanatanam, Buddhir Buddhimatam Asmi, Buddhir Buddhimatam Asmi, Tejas Tejas Vinamaham, Tejas Tejas Vinamaham. Bijam Mam Sarvabhutanam, Vidhi Paritha Sanatanam, Buddhir Buddhimatam Asmi, Tejas Tejaswinamaham. He says, Vidhi, may you know Mom, Hey Partha, name for son of Prithu, Hey Partha, name for Arjuna, Vidhi, imperative, second person singular, may you know me, Mom, who am Sanatanam, eternal. There's never a time when I was not. So I have been here from beginningless time. So Parameshwara, Ishwara is talking. May you know me, who am eternal, that I am the bijam. I am the seed in all of the beings. Now here he's not talking about seed in terms of the cause of everything. From the causal body, I am the one from whom the whole creation is coming. He's not talking there. Bijam means every plant has a seed, every animal has a seed, comes from a seed. Right? Every living thing comes from a seed. You know, from its causal seed. I am that seed. I am the one from whom each individual, I am the seed from which each individual plant, an animal, and human comes from. I am that bija. So there is nothing, there is no growth, there is no being that does not have me in seed form as its source. So there's a causal, karana sharira. That's different than what he's talking about here. It's that I am the very source in terms of your seed from which you have come. So know me as that. And he says, buddhi buddhimatam asmi. I am the buddhi. Means I am the viveka shakti. I am the capacity for viveka. The ability for the buddhi, the ability to discriminate. I am that buddhi, so Shankara says the viveka shakti. I am the capacity to discriminate. In the buddhimatams, in those who have that capacity, human beings who have a buddhi, the human beings who have a buddhi that they're making use of, means they have an intellect, they have a mind that they're making use of, and that with that mind, they have ability to discern, to have viveka, to see between dharma, to discern dharma adharma, to discern between nitya and anitya, between that which is real, that which is timeless, and that which is time-bound. To discern between punya and papa, dharma adharma. To make these distinctions between atma and atma, all of these things, between nitya and anitya. That person who has that buddhi, that capacity for viveka. So he doesn't just say the person who has viveka. He says the viveka shakti, the capacity for viveka. So among those who have a buddhi, I am that who have the capacity for viveka. I am that capacity. So again, each one of these is destroying, as Swamiji says in his commentary, each one of these he's eliminating the ahankara. You think you have viveka. I am that viveka. I am the buddhi. You know, I am the buddhi which has viveka. I am the buddhi. And I am the viveka which the buddhi has. So if you have a buddhi and you're evoking that capacity of viveka, it doesn't belong to you. It belongs to me. It belongs to Ishwara. So I'm the viveka and the buddhi. Then he says, tejas, tejasvinamaham. And he says, among the tejasvis, the ones who have brilliance, a tejasvi, they often they're called brahmanas. Say, oh, that brahmana, he has so much tejas. Because of chanting the Gayatri Mantra and doing for instance, they chant the Gayatri Mantra every day, several times a day, and they do the Agnihotra, different rituals, and that practice will give a lot of brilliance and a lot of tejas. It's like that's so often tejas is something that is, that's an example that's used for somebody who has that tejas, that clarity, that brightness, that mental energy, you know, that physical energy where you seem to be glowing. That's tejas. So he says, that tejas, I am that tejas. Among the tejasvi, the ones, among those who are glowing with brilliance and brightness and clarity and, you know, mental energy, physical, the brightness, not just physical energy, it's that brightness that empowers the body and the mind. And when you have that tejas, you feel that energy and that clean, crisp energy. He says, that tejas is me. I am that tejas. In the tejasvi, tejas ones, those who have that tejas, I am that brilliance that is being manifest. Okay. So then he says, balam balabhatan chaham, kamaraga vivarjitam, karma virudho bhuteshu, karma viruddho bhuteshu, kamosmi paratarshubha, kamosmi paratarshubha, balam balavatam chaham cha aham, kama raga vivarjitam, dharma aviruddha bhuteshu, kamaha asmi paratarshubha. They exalted among Bharatarshubha, means full among the Bharatas, those born in Bharata, so the most exalted of those born in India. He says, I am the strength of those who have strength, Well, all the beings, all the people who have strength, people, now we'll see why, of those who are strong, those people have strength, you know, physical strength, mental strength, strength, of those who have strength, I am that strength which is free of kama and raga, kama, raga, varjita. I am the strength, and really, I am the strength that's free of ahankara. The person, Swamiji has a beautiful commentary on this. I am the strength that is free of kama. He's using kama and raga together, and Shankara deals with this also. When kama and raga are usually used almost synonymously, like if I say raga dvesha, ragas are my desires, the things that I go after. And the dvesha is the negative form of desire, the things I run away from, I don't want. So likes and dislikes. And so kamas are usually, and ragas, they're usually used one or the other, but now he says kama and raga. So Shankara says, they're using both, because now we'll take, if they're using both, we're going to take like this. The one who has no kama means they don't have a desire for something new that they don't have. Something that's not yet been procured. They don't have a desire for that. So their strength is free of the desire to gain something. And raga is the passion to keep something that you have. That's how Shankara's, you know, separating this, separating this word. So, mm-hmm. I am that strength which is free of the desire to achieve or to gain and free from the desire to keep. Because once that comes in, and Swami, this is where I really appreciate Swamiji's commentary, if strength is in a way contaminated with raga, with kama and raga, there's ahankara there. And then that strength is not just protective, that strength can also be a cause of fear because your personal desire is associated with it. So then your strength can be used, can be abused. Because of kama and raga, that strength can be abused. But my strength, Ishwara is talking, my strength won't be abused. That strength isn't going to be abused. That strength is protecting because there's no ahankara. It's not a strength for me to use against you or a strength to use for my own purposes because it's free of kama and raga. So it's a strength that's free from ahankara. That strength that is free of ahankara, among the strong, I am that strength, you know. So when I was reading this, I was thinking, Swamiji used to tell a nice story once in a while about strength, and he was actually, I think it was just talking with me or with maybe a few people were there. He was saying, you know, but it's the strength of a lion, the king of the jungle, how a lion would be, who's resting in his lair in the jungle, and how that lion would be if a little mouse, you know, a little tiny mouse crawls up on his back. You know? So Sanji said, how a little mouse, if a little mouse were to come and curl up on his back, what would the lion do about the mouse? He would just look there. So I'm just sort of kind of act that out. He'd just look there, see the little mouse, and go back to sleep. But there would be no inclination to use his strength against the little mouse. So it's not exactly fitting, but that's what came to my mind. I've always liked that story. When a person is strong, the little irritants or the little problems here and there don't faze them. It's not anything to act out against. So imagine the lion, little mouse is resting there on his back, snuggling up into his fur. So the lion gets up furious and with a loud roar, you know, scares the little mouse off and says no. Little mouse is not enough to disturb the shanti of the lion. So that's a little story he told about the mouse. So I like it. So he says, I am that strength in those who have strength, but it's a strength that's free of, you can say free of the need to gain something, and free of raga dvesha, and free of the need to protect something. That strength I am, and that strength is a strength that is free of fear and so not threatening to anybody. It's a strength that's protective, not a strength that threatens. And then at the next one he says, dharma aviruddha bhuteshu kamaha asmi bharatarshaba. Hey bharatarshaba, and I am that kama, I am the desire, I am desire, but desire which is dharma aviruddha, that's not opposed to dharma, desire that's not opposed to dharma. So that's the kama, the desire that actually goes along, that's the manifestation of my prarabdha, right? There's nothing in the prarabdha that is going to make you behave adharmically. You have desires arise in the prarabdha, the very reasons that you were, what you were born for. You have to have, even if you have a drink of water, you have to have a desire to go get a drink of water. So the desires that you have that come, that don't create, that are not opposed to dharma, those desires I am. And so here, again, I like that Swamiji said something really nice here. So, every person, so many people, including himself, have desires to do this and then do that. Look at how all the things he's gotten involved in, like with his aim for seva, teaching so many people, starting these ashrams, coming to the States. All these things, you know, there has to be something that allows for that in your buddhi. You know, if the desire, it's not a raga dvesha, but it has to come up in the mind, I will do this, let me do this. That desire, the benign desire, doesn't hurt anybody, it's for the benefit of all beings, right? And then the desire, and Shankara talks about, but also the desire for food, the desire for water, desire for rest. All of these things, the upadhi requires certain things to be done. So those desires, there's nothing adharmic about them. So those desires are going to arise. So for those people who, you know, they don't have a desire to read, for instance. They don't have a desire to go out. They don't have a desire to get engaged in anything. They don't want to do this or they don't want to do that. Then Swamiji asks, for those people, I am the silence. For those people for whom there's no desires arising, all they want to do is kind of sit quietly. Then for them, when that desire, those desires aren't rising, then I am that silence. As long as that silence is not leading to some sort of adharma or slack or slovenliness, I am that silence. You know? So when the desire is not rising, then I am the silence in the mind. When the desire is rising, then I am that desire that is pushing you forward to do something. So this is, you know, this Swamiji makes a few comments, Shankara makes a few comments, but it's so important to realize that it's called the Ichha Shakti, that power for desire. There's Jnana Shakti. Jnana Shakti is the power for the Shakti, that's that power to gain knowledge, for Jnana, for knowledge. There's Kriya Shakti, like this Balavat, that's Kriya Shakti, those who have the strength, you know, and who are practicing the Tejas, that's Kriya Shakti. I have the power to do these things. I have the power to know. And the Ichha Shakti, these three Shaktis are there. I have the power of Ichha, of desire itself. And so there's nothing wrong that the mind should want to do this or want to do that. There's no, what problem is there? There's no problem at all. It's when it's a dharma that there becomes a problem, or when you have raga dvesha attached to that kama. You know, like I need that, I have the desire, but then I need that to be happy. That becomes a problem. And then when that I need that to be happy, and then I fall, which every Ajnani has that, then it becomes I need that to be happy, but then do I transgress dharma? And so if even as Ajnani I need that to be happy, that's still me. Ishwara is saying these are all my laws. But if you cross the dharma, that is, even though I am the jiva and everything, all the, I can think all the laws, but the jiva is the one that is, that the jiva, the individual within this manifest creation, is the one that's affected by the ajnanam. And that ajnanam causes me to go off track. Right? Because it causes me to have raga dvesha, kama, to see myself as a limited being. And so that adharma is coming from the jiva. All the laws, I am the jiva and I am all the laws. But the manifestation of adharma is once removed. Right? Because once, it's still Ishwara, But it's once removed because it's the intervention of the jiva that is born of ajnana. So that's why he makes this kind of distinction. For my kama is free of ahankara. My bala, my strength, free of ahankara. Tejas, free of ahankara. So without the ahankara, that means all of the capacities are part of my swarupa, part of my whole manifestation. All of these capacities belong to me. And I am the whole. So there is no capacity that's outside of me. But then the jiva will, with the ahankara, take the capacity to belong to me. And once you take it, that's like a bouncing ball. Once the I becomes like the ahankara comes, when it's identified with the jiva upadhi, then the whole world splits up, right, into subject and object, and me and all the things that I'm not, me and all of the things that I need to be whole. So that's also, Ishwara can say, that's also me, that's also my ajnana. Yeah. But that ajnana is situated in the jiva, not in Ishwara. For Ishwara, it's the maya upadhi. I'm the maya upadhi. There's no, not bound by ajnana, not bound by ignorance. But within that maya upadhi, every jiva is subject to that ignorance. And that ignorance is what causes there to be dharma, adharma, punya and papa, right? All of this dvaita, even in the experience of the jiva, good and bad, all these types of things. Yes. So now it says, ye chaiva sattvika bhavaha, ye chaiva sattvika bhavaha, rajasas tamasas chaye, rajasas tamasas chaye, mate eve titan vidhi. Mata eve titan vidhi, netwe hante shute mayi, netwe hante shute mayi. Yecha eva sattvikaha bhavaha, rajasaha tamasaha cha ye. Mataha eva iti tan vidhi, netu aham teshu te mayi. He says, now, this is the last one of these that he's going to do. So he says, and yecha eva, and indeed those who are sattvikaha bhavaha, rajasaha bhavaha, and tamasaha chaye. He says, may you know that all of those beings that are born of sattva, sattva, rajas, and tamas, all the beings that are born of sattva, and all beings, all things born of rajas, and all things born of tamas, all of those things are from me alone. So now, there's a few different ways to take this. You can take bhavas of all of the creatures in the universe. Those that are born of pure sattva are the devatas. All of those beings, all of the devatas, that are predominantly sattva, all of those beings are only my manifestation. All of the rajasaha, all of the rajas, beings born of rajas, all of the rakshasas, all of the demons, those beings also are only from me. And all of those born of tamas, like animals and asuras that are predominantly tamas, buddhi predominantly tamas, all of those beings also, they are only from me. Or you can say, take bhavaha as things or attributes. So you can say, all of those conditions of mind that are sattvic, the sattvic conditions of mind like pleasure and shanti and compassion and goodness, these are all sattvic qualities. All of those are from me. All of the rajas qualities like anger and aggression, you know, and rage, all of these type of things, energy, you know, assertiveness, all of these type of things, all of these type of qualities, these also are only from me. And tamas qualities like slothfulness and laziness, all of these qualities, they also are only from me. They all belong, they're all part of my laws, right? Another way he takes it is, because of karma, because of your karma, all beings are born with a predominance of sattva, predominance of rajas, predominance of tamas. So if you were going to their caste system, for instance, by guna, they'll say the brahmanas are predominantly sattva. The kshatriyas are sattva, predominantly sattva and rajas. The vaishyas are predominantly, I think it's rajas and tamas, or sattva and rajas and tamas. And then the shudras, they say, are predominantly tamas and rajas or something like that. He breaks it all down. So all of these upadis that you take, all that you can take because of your karma, I am responsible for all of that. All of the predominance of sattva, rajas and tamas in the individual beings that you are, that all beings are. I am responsible because of your karma. Because of your karma, you're taking that particular upadi. And those karmas are all nothing but me. So all of this, remember the whole, one thing that's recognized here, Maya itself is sattva, rajas and tamas. There's no other Maya other than these three gunas. Maya is these three gunas. It's made of sattva, rajas and tamas. And so when the creation manifests, it manifests as sattva, there's a pervasion of sattva, rajas and tamas in everything. Some things are more predominantly sattva, some things more predominantly rajas. Some things are only sattva, like for instance in the sukshma sharira, the subtle body, right? The sense organs and the mind are pure sattva. Five elements, pure sattva. Five elements, the pure sattva aspect of the five elements, you know, are the sense organs in the mind. Then if you were to look at what in this creation or what in the upadi is pure rajas. It's karmendriyas in the prana are pure rajas. This body is made of tamas. Right? And so then they'll look in terms of qualities. The mind can be influenced by rajas. It can be influenced predominantly by sattva. It can be influenced by tamas. And so then you can look at it all this way. Then you can say, by karma, people have a disposition that's primarily sattva or primarily rajas, but just by disposition, you know. Or in terms of the different lokas, some lokas are primarily sattva, like the devaloka. Some lokas are mixed, you know, like this bhuloka is a mixture. And there's hell lokas that could be more rajas or tamas, causing a lot of pain. And so the lokas also are predominantly one thing or another, you know. Or a mix. So all of this, all of these beings, the sattva, the rajas and tamas, all of these come from me alone. This is my Maya Upadi. So it's not like I am only the sattva, the kind, loving, shining, angelic beings, or you know, the wonderful, peaceful, saintly humans, you know, or the beautiful animals. I'm also the jackals. Right? Have you ever seen these nature movies where there's these just beautiful, graceful, wonderful animals, and they'll show those, and then they'll go and they'll show these hyenas and jackals and scary type of types of animals that don't attract you to them, you know. And then they'll go down into the earth and you'll see animals deep in the earth that don't have any eyes. They're just like wormy creatures that are, and they make sure to show you the whole everything that's available. They make sure to show you all of that, from the most beautiful, most sublime, to the most kind of horrific and horrifying, you know. And Bhagavan will say, whatever it is, whether it attracts you to it or whether it repels you, that is me. These are my beings. Because of the karma they've taken, that because of the karma which is me, it is my order. There is nothing in this creation that is away from my order. And so if you're taking various upadis because of your karma, you know, sattva upadis or very, you know, tamas or rajasic upadis, that's not away from me. I'm all of that also. So I am all beings, whether they be sattva, rajas and tamas, and I am all things, whether they be sattva, rajas and tamas. I am all qualities, whether they be sattva, rajas and tamas. There is nothing that escapes my orb. I am the essence of all of these things. So he says, so know, may you know all of them. He says, all of them are from me alone. Mataha eva. He says, mataha eva. Mataha eva iti. He says, Tan Vidhi, may you know them. Iti is what? They are all from only me. They're only from me. But then he says, not to aham teshu, but I am not in them. They are all from me, but I am not in them. Te mayi, they are in me, but I am not in them. No, all of them are from me, but I am not, they are in me, but I am not in them. And so there's twofold ways to look at this also. As the Vivarta Upadana Karma, as me, my the exalted Prakriti, my higher Prakriti, being the cause for everything, you know, as the set chit, I am the very set chit which goes through the very consciousness, the very being, which is the warp and woof of everything in this creation. But I have not gone through any becoming to become them. I am not located in them. Like if I was located in my, like say for instance, if I have a pot and I fill the pot with water, the pot is containing the water, right? I'm not contained in anything. So he said, nothing contains me. Like water in a pot, I'm not contained. I'm like the space in the pot. I'm the space in the pot. I'm not the water in the pot. I'm the space in the pot because actually if I move the pot from A to B, and if I move the pot from A to B, space is not contained. In fact, the pot is in space. And even more, you could say like this. So that's an example that we use. I'm not contained. The sat-chit consciousness is not contained in any of these names and forms which come from me. None of them contain me. Yeah? Just like also you can say, on another level, just like the wave ocean, I am the water. Right? I'm not contained in the waves. I'm not contained in the ocean. I am their very being. I am their very self. You know, it's not like the wave is holding me. Right? There is nothing but this wave is not holding the water. There's nothing there but water. I am the very truth of the wave and I'm the very truth of the ocean. I'm not contained or changed by any of it. Water remains as water. No matter what the name and form is. In that way, you know, I am not in them, they are all in me. But in that way we're seeing Advaita. There's no in at all. There is only me. I can also say, this whole creation, all of it is in me. I am its very warp and woof. I'm the very set chit. But I am not in them. Like the water in the pot, I'm not contained in anything. I'm the very being which all things enjoy. So that's from the standpoint of the Vivarta Upadana Karana. I'm the very set chit that all of these things enjoy. They are in me, because without me they would have no being, no existence. But I am free of them. And then, also, from the standpoint of Ishwara, the whole Maya Upadi, all of these things are in me. All the sattva, rajas, tamas, all of the objects, all of the things in this creation, all of the sattva manifestations, all of the rajas manifestations, all of the tamas manifestations, all of them definitely are in me Ishwara, the whole. But I am the one who is identified with the entire Maya Upadi. I am not identified with any given part. It is just like the dream analogy is so good for this. If you have a dream, if you're having a dream, and in that dream, say there are many, many characters. There's sattvic characters, and there's angels in the dream, there's devatas in the dream, there's rakshasas in the dream, and there's lots of animals and creatures in the dream, lots of humans in the dream. There's a lot of dharmic things going on, a lot of adharma going on, everything imaginable is going on in this dream, which is your dream. But you are not identified with any character in the dream. Right? You're not identified with the jiva in the dream. So all of these characters, with all of this diversity, punya and papa, good, bad, all of this diversity, multi-level diversity, all of it is in me. All of it is in me as Ishwara. but I am not in it. Right? Because I'm not identified. I'm the whole. So when you're when you have a dream, you are the whole. In fact, we say with Ishvara to understand, because of not being identified with any name and form of in the dream, the identification with Ishvara is with the sattva. So the identification of Ishvara's experience is the whole being known. Because Ishvara reflects is reflected in the sattva. There's no identification with the rajas or tamas aspects that are responsible for the manifestation of any type of duality. So sattva means, what that means is for Ishvara is the whole creation. The entire creation is like the dream, it is my vision. It is what we call infinite manifest knowledge. Right? Like if you have a thought, whatever is in that thought is manifest knowledge. You're not identified with anything in the thought, say, if you're not overwhelmed by an emotion. So just say, if I ask you to have like a thought of a meadow, that's manifest knowledge. Your identification, in a sense, is with the sattva. Identification means your knownness. It's your upadhi. You don't have to take your... I don't mean identification in an ignorant way of taking yourself to be the meadow. Right? But the meadow comes and you are its being and you pervade it. It is known by you. So that means where are you in it? You're the reflection. You're the sattva. See what I mean? You're the sattva there. You're not identified with any object in it. So for Ishvara, Ishvara is predominantly sattva. Right? Because the whole infinite manifest knowledge is known. So no identification with any part of it. Whereas the jiva, for the jiva, there's the ajnanam there. And there is total identification. I am this. I am this. Ishvara doesn't have that experience. That's why we say that for Ishvara, the Maya Upadhi, it's just when we have this avarna and vikshepa, when we say ajnanam or Maya has twofold capacity, one is projection. That's called vikshepa. The other is avarna, that capacity to cover. So the jivas have avarna and vikshepa because the self is covered. Right? From your standpoint, you can still project, you can project the dream, you can project all of these things. You have vikshepa because you're the material that you are is prakriti. You're not away from the prakriti, you are the prakriti. Right? But your identification is with the individual. The individual is subject, is only part. It's got avarna, it's got the ajnana, the ignorance, and the vikshepa. Bhagavan doesn't have ajnana. The Maya Upadhi, the total Maya Upadhi, is just vikshepa. So you have that experience. You're a little Ishvara in terms of your imagination. Right? You're a little Ishvara. Because you don't have, when you're imagining something, you don't have avarna. You don't have any covering. You can daydream it. You're lost. When you become lost in your daydream, right, then there's avarna and vikshepa. But what about when you're just imagining? You know, it's just a manifestation of knowledge. If I ask you to imagine a meadow, I ask you to imagine a car, or to imagine an apple, whatever. Right? That's just vikshepa. That's the Maya capacity. Right? And you aren't identified with any given thing. You're identified with the whole of the imagination. See what I mean? The whole. Not with a part of the whole. So when the Maya Upadhi manifests, then the one who's identified, the one for whom the entire Upadhi is known, we can put it that way, that is Ishvara. So there's only an identification with the sattva. Right? Because just from Brahman's standpoint, there is no creation. So the one who's just reflecting in the sattva, that is Ishvara. The jivas are all the ones that are, there's the sattva, okay, but the sattva is contaminated by the rajas and tamas. And so there's this individualities there. So, that are born of that. So now Krishna is starting to say, you know, I am all of this. All of this is from me alone. But on both levels, as Ishvara, the Maya Upadhi, and just from the stand, as from this lower prakriti, the parinama prakriti, the whole manifestation of maya. In that way, all of them are contained in me, I'm not contained in them. Even from the standpoint of the maya upadhi, from the standpoint, you know, of the upara, of the para prakriti, of myself as just Brahman, from that standpoint, I am changeless. I've not become anything. I can use I'm the space to the pot, not the water in the pot. Yeah. Nothing is containing me at all. Or I can go to wave water that's going to another level. Okay. So now when he says this, he'll go on, this will do next week. He goes on to say, but it's because of this maya, this all that I am, but because of all of this, all beings are deluded. By my maya, all of the beings are deluded. So that's what he has to move into now.
Deluded.
Fooled. Deluded. You take yourself to be an individual separate from the whole, when actually you are Brahman.
The maya broken down, the measure, that's one of the translations.
No, that's mayat. That's, yeah, that's not maya. That's different.
Yeah.
Maya here.
Yeah.
Okay, let's take a moment. Om Purnamada Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnamevavashishyate Om Shanti 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 Hari Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Hari Om.
So yeah, this is a little silly, but one of the problems that I have with imagining the meadow thing, when I imagine a meadow, I always think of myself like looking at the meadow. So then it's almost as if I'm a character in the dream, and then it becomes hard for me to imagine what does it mean to be everything, because.
Well, wait a minute. If you imagine a meadow.
So I see it like visually.
Yeah, that's all right though, because you're not a character in the meadow. It's one thing, see, there's a difference. You either imagine, say you imagine, for instance, the meadow. So now, you're seeing the whole meadow. The whole meadow is in consciousness.
Right.
Okay, now what if you were, you imagine in that meadow that you're imagining and seeing it. Now you're walking, you're seeing people walking through the meadow. So you're still not identified with anything in the meadow, but you're seeing these people walking through it. And you could have animals and birds in the meadow too, and now you're seeing all of them, right?
It's very visual. It's like I'm seeing it and almost like seeing. It's not like...
Let me explain this, so this is important. You're thinking of it as visual, but actually through your physical eyes, there's no meadow there. Right? Mm-hmm. So what is really happening is that the meadow imagination is just illumined by consciousness. Because there's nobody, there's no other, another set of eyes that are looking at the meadow. Okay? Okay, now, what if you as a jiva enter the meadow? So now you imagine yourself in the meadow. You're a person walking in the meadow. Now you imagine, this is kind of hard to do, but you imagine you're identified with yourself walking in the meadow, and now you're looking at the meadow from the eyes of the person who's in the meadow. Right?
Right, yeah.
Okay. If you're looking at the person, looking at the meadow from the eyes of a person in the meadow, like I'm looking at you from my eyes, okay, then that's the jiva. If you're looking at the meadow, only illumining the meadow, then there's consciousness plus the mind. Right? What's happening is you're doing an extra step. You're looking at the meadow, and then, I think this is what you're doing, then you're imagining yourself standing at a meadow looking at it.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, I'm standing like far off and seeing the whole thing.
Right.
Yeah.
So you're still keeping in your imagination.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
So now your imagination includes you standing at a meadow looking out at the meadow.
Yeah,
so you're still the jiva within the meadow.
Right.
Looking at the meadow. Mm-hmm. Okay? But actually, your physical body with your physical sense organs are not in that imagination. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, say now I'm going to expand your imagination. First I just asked you to have imagination of a meadow. Okay? And just like if I say, think of a cup. You don't have to include it, let's look at the cup for a minute. Imagine a cup. And you don't have to imagine in that imagine a cup yourself looking at a cup. If I said, just think of a cup. There's just now cup awareness. Right?
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't include you looking at a cup awareness. That's a different imagination. I could have imagination, okay, you're having imagination of a cup, and it's just cup awareness.
Right.
Then you have imagination of yourself looking at a cup. Then instead of just a cup awareness, there's right?
Mm-hmm.
That's a bigger imagination. But it's still an imagination. It's different than my physically looking at a cup. True?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so now, instead of just imagining, now, so you imagine a cup, and then you imagine yourself looking at a cup. Those are two imaginations. Now you imagine a meadow. You see a meadow. Just meadow, that's all. Meadow awareness. Now imagine yourself looking at a meadow vista. Now then you're a jiva in that imagination looking at a meadow. You see, it's two different imaginations.
I guess, I mean, it's sort of so quickly I just end up personifying myself in the...
Yeah, so I'm trying to take you back.
Like, to sort of do it slowly so that...
Because all I'm talking about is like, say, okay, try like this. Just do it on these images. Meadow. Mountain. Sky. Tree. So you let these images come. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And so, if I do tree, then the thing is, if I just say tree, then whatever tree image will come. If I say, you know, bird image mm-hmm. will come. But what about if I say bird in a tree? Now bird in a tree image will come.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Now what if I say bird in a tree with the sun shining? Now the image mm-hmm. is getting bigger, right? So now if I say bird in a tree with the sun shining and clouds and wind blowing, I'm painting a bigger image.
Mm-hmm.
But there's still, it's just an image. And so I can take this image bigger and bigger and bigger. It doesn't have anything to do, it's like a painting.
Mm-hmm.
But as I make the painting bigger, all that's happening is that, you know, you are aware of the painting. The painting is, there's painting awareness, image awareness. You're not identified with anything in particular in the image, it's just whatever the image is image awareness, image consciousness. So Ishwara is image consciousness. It's just the image is infinite. That's why Swamiji says, you know, infinite manifest knowledge. And manifest knowledge is what? Like if I say, imagine a tree. You have tree images inside, so some image is going to come. That's manifest knowledge. So what if we take the whole Maya Upadhi as manifest knowledge? Then it's manifest knowledge consciousness. The whole manifest knowledge is known. So when I'm saying these images, whatever the image is known. And it can be a complex image. It could be the image of a city, the image of a universe, the image of a meadow, an image of, you know, you walking along on the beach. It's all an image. It's image consciousness. And that, whatever is included in that image is enjoying its image consciousness. But the consciousness is only one out of which the whole image comes. Whether it's complex or simple, doesn't matter. But for you as a jiva, you can have all of these complex image consciousness, right? But you're a jiva within the infinite manifest knowledge of Ishvara. The jivatvam, this body, mind, sense organs, is part of Ishvara's complex image, which is, has image consciousness. Does that make sense?
I mean, so it's like I'm a character. I mean, this is not an immediate analogy, but like I'm a character in a dream, so sort of.
You're a character in Ishvara's dream. So it's not a, we don't say dream because it's, we say the infinite manifest knowledge, which is like a lucid dream, an infinite lucid dream. We say lucid dream to get rid of this idea of ignorance, because if you have a dream, you're probably lost in the dream, identified with the character. So I can say most of us have had dreams where, in fact, you're not identified with any character in the dream. It's just a scene, a setting, something's going on. You don't have a, you're not identified with anything. You're just abiding there as the whole.
Mm-hmm.
There's no knowledge there saying I am the whole, or no sense that I am an infinite. But nevertheless, you're not identified with anything within the dream. And then that dream, you know, then all of a sudden you can enter the dream and you can be identified as somebody in the dream. And then that identification can go and you can just be the whole again. You go in and out very comfortably with being the whole to be unidentified with the characters.
So it is like a lucid dream, right?
When we say Ishvara, you can say it's like a lucid dream, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Or like an infinite mind. See, we use these words, then you have to work with them to get rid of the ajnana. Yeah. And to recognize it as infinite means there's nothing outside of it. For Ishvara is Maya Upadhi. There's nothing outside of that Maya Upadhi. Well, for you, you have a dream or an imagination that's taking place within the Maya Upadhi, but Ishvara's Maya Upadhi is not taking place within something other than Brahman, which is not containing it. Brahman is not containing the Maya Upadhi, it is the very self of the Maya Upadhi. You know, it's like you say, the water's not containing the ocean, it is the ocean. It's not containing it, there's nothing there but water. So here, there's nothing here but Brahman. It's not containing the Maya Upadhi.
When you say that I am Brahman, and you understand that, then are you the whole or are you the part? Or does
from the standpoint of the Upadhi, you're a part of the whole, but from the standpoint of your truth, who you are, the conscious being, you are Brahman, right? And Brahman is this body, Brahman is the mind, Brahman is the sense organs, but the sense organs, the body and the mind, are Brahman is free from them, but is the truth of them and free from them also.
So that's when you can say, I am in all of them, but they are not in me. Is that
that's right.
What follows there?
Mm-hmm.
So Brahman within the Maya Upadhi, that would be Ishvara, right?
Brahman with the Maya Upadhi is Ishvara, that's right.
Yeah.
Acknowledging the Maya Upadhi, there's Ishvara. So for us the teaching is really I am Ishvara. Because the jiva who's within this creation is the one that has the problem. You can say I am Brahman, but if you say I am Brahman, you have to know that you can as well say I am Ishvara. Because there is no Ishvara that isn't Brahman.
Mm-hmm.
It's like I should be able to say I am the ocean and I am the water. Right? What if I say I am the ocean as a jiva? Well, look at it like this. As a jiva, say the wave. For the wave to say I am the ocean, either it has a mental disease, mental problem. Because there's no way that the wave can be the ocean unless it's the water. And it's through that, because the wave, otherwise the wave has to be, because of its limited nature, it has to only be part of the ocean. It can't say I'm the ocean. The first to say I am the ocean, it has to know I am the water, and the water is the truth of the ocean. And so now, look at, if you say I am Ishvara, either you're really deluded, because you think you, the jiva upadhi, am Ishvara. But if you're jnani, if you say I am Ishvara, everything is included in that. You recognize that you are Brahman, and Brahman is, you know, the self of Ishvara. It is the one from whom the whole Maya has come. That's why Krishna here is saying, I have these two prakritis, the Maya Upadi, which is the lower prakriti. It's the lower prakriti because it's dependent for its being on the higher prakriti, on Brahman. Right? There is no Maya. Maya doesn't have any independent existence apart from the Satchit.
So when I'm sitting here, if all of this is Ishvara, that means I am Ishvara, right? Well, when I think that I'm an individual, separate, is that sense is there too. Well,
yeah, but when you say you are Ishvara, that means you at that time when you're saying that, you're not identifying with yourself.
No, I can't do that. Yeah.
No, you can't say I am Ishvara and be identified with the individual Upadi.
Right.
If you say I am Ishvara, you're recognizing this Upadi is part and parcel of Ishvara, that this is Ishvara. It is Ishvara as the wave is the ocean, in the sense the wave is not apart from, separate from the ocean. So you're not separate at all. This Upadi is not, it's not like there's Ishvara and your Upadi is sitting on top of Ishvara, walking on Ishvara. So this Upadi, every part of it, your mind, your emotions, your sense organs, your body, every part of it is warp and woof. Ishvara says, Krishna says, I'm the warp and woof of everything that's here.
So there's not a gradient of some upadis being more important than others, or superior or inferior. Does that...
Those superior, inferior, all of that comes from within the creation.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, but one thing that Krishna will say, I am, I think it was in the third or fourth chapter. He listed all of the vibhutis, all of the glories, like I am the Himalayas, I am the Ganga. It's all the glories, These are all my vibhutis.
Well, what about the little things like the anthill?
You can say I'm the anthill too.
So it has to be inclusive like
that. It has to be inclusive. One of the reasons for praising the vibhutis as myself is that for everyone to enjoy all of the vibhutis, take the ahankara out of the vibhutis and enjoy them as Ishvara. Mm-hmm. So say somebody is very a skilled pianist or whatever,
mm-hmm.
then that's a manifestation of Ishvara. Ishvara's vibhutis, Ishvara's glories. Now, so say somebody says, this is me, this is my glory, then everybody runs away,
Because everybody knows intrinsically that it's not true.
There's
something they recognize as a falseness about it, then.
Yeah, but that's true. And also it helps you not to have a lowly ahankara.
Yeah.
They have the vibhuti, where's my vibhuti?
Yeah, yeah.
Instead it's all,
It's like 6 billion of us. There's 6 billion little vibhutis. I mean, how does that work out?
But he also goes into, I'm the smallest in the small, and I'm the greatest in the great, and all these types of things. So in the end you have to recognize I'm the whole.
Mm-hmm.
So these are all just ways of pulling the ahankara out of it. And recognizing everything as Ishvara.
So isn't our human mind the type of mind, take this as talking about human beings, I mean I know animals do this too, but just say for humans, that we have this ability to separate or cognize existence is known as if it's separate objects.
Absolutely. And sense organs, everything about us is designed to experience duality.
Right. But the truth is, the existence is known that it's all the same, but it's just our minds kind of break it up.
No, it doesn't break up the existence. It doesn't even think about the existence because it's totally superimposed. So all you see...
Mm-hmm.
with your sense organs are names and forms.
Yeah.
Okay. The names and forms, including the seer and the seen, are consciousness.
Right.
But the names and forms of everything is consciousness. Subject object is consciousness. But because of the sense organs, there's a subject and an object.
Right.
And the subject can see through the sense organs objects. Like an object or this object is a right and a left and an up and a down, and there's different colors and there's names and forms, infinite names and forms. Right? And so that's our plight. You can see
there's more than one.
What it means. What is required to take the jiva from that upadhi, which is only meant to experience duality, and throw the whole upadhi into the duality and recognize yourself as the water. It requires so much. It requires a pramana.
Mm-hmm.
It requires all a teaching. There's nothing about. It's not about doing here. Any doing, any experience you might generate is all only within duality.
But it's not only recognizing yourself in a sense of duality. It's recognizing that, I mean, as yourself as Brahman, it's recognizing that there's really nothing here but that.
That's right.
So that's kind of bigger in a way.
It is bigger. It's much bigger.
Mm.
Because even, you could say, to be more precise in the language. There's a recognition of myself as the Atma, but then to recognize the Atma is Brahman. Brahman means infinite, that the self is infinite.
Right.
You know, if you say the self is Brahman,
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Then that means there's nothing else. Once you say Brahman, there's nothing else.
Yeah.
You know? So the Mahavakya is Atma is Brahman.
Yeah.
Otherwise, Atma, my Atma is different from your Atma. You know, I recognize this Atma inside. You know, I have an experience of the Atma. Also, that's the whole problem.
Right.
If I can have an experience of the Atma, there's a subject object. There's one who's experiencing it. So everything has to come, it has to become, the self has to become everything. You have to recognize it as everything.
Right.
And that's the knowledge. That, otherwise, it isn't knowledge, actually. And there's all these prakriyas, you know, that are being handled in order to bring this about. And that prakriyas are taking care of different standpoints.
Mm-hmm.
They have to collapse all of these different standpoints into that oneness.
Well, when you see the whole and can identify it as Ishvara, what is that experience like? I mean, is it experiential in any sense? Because I don't sense it quite like that. I mean,
experience is a problem, but it's recognizing your experience differently. It's seeing the experience differently because of knowledge, because of viveka. Yeah.
Well, am I supposed to see that the manifest creation is all Ishvara? Does that mean? That's where I get tripped. I don't think that's the proper way of looking at it.
Well, you do see it all as Ishvara, but that doesn't mean that it lights up with neons.
It doesn't
look different, but you recognize it all differently.
So the grass and the trees and
the grass and the trees and everything is exactly the same, except there's a recognition of the pervasiveness of the Satchit and a recognition.
Uh-huh.
of the one manifestation that this is all one whole. You appreciate it over and over in so many different ways.
Yeah. So it lights up in that way, but it doesn't light up in as a neon.
And two relations totally different.
The way you relate to it is all totally different. Yeah.
You know, it's so interesting because when there's this discussion about the senses, you know, they somehow, you know, one could think they got somehow a bad rap or something, you know? Because they lead to raga and dvesha and to more karma. And
but the bad rap has to, if there's a bad rap, let's go back to jnana.
Wait, that's the senses. I just really got that, you know, from the way you presented that.
Yeah.
Because I always in my back of my mind, I always had the sense, why are the senses and sattva, you know, if they promote so much rajas, you know, and you know, stirring up and desires and all the stuff, you know, and like, I think the way you just placed it was really, it kind of became totally clear to me that the potential of the senses is actually to recognize who we really are. And so
the potential
when you use them in that way, then they don't become a distraction anymore, and they don't lead to more raga and dvesha necessary, but they need actually to recognition of that I'm Ishvara.
Well, the knowledge makes you recognize that you're Ishvara, and then the senses know what they're seeing.
Right.
Because the senses are all, they're just seeing. They're just doing their job
right.
of seeing and hearing.
Right.
But then how are you recognizing what you see
mm-hmm.
and what you hear?
Mm-hmm.
So if there's ajnanam there, then you take yourself,
mm-hmm.
you know, to be a limited being, and then what you're seeing is something different than you, because
mm-hmm.
your knowledge is informing your experience.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because you, what you have, with knowledge or without knowledge, you still have sense organs to see, you still have a mind to think, you still have emotions to feel. But this all being done in ignorance, and all that superimposition is there because of that. So they're all, the mind is wonderful. It's wonderful to have a body and a mind and sense organs, and it's, to be walking through Ishvara and all of that, it's that wonderful thing. And it can be, you know, it can also be a cause of great sorrow, but
yeah.
it's not the cause of sorrow,
right.
the ignorance.
Right.
That causes you to relate to what you're seeing
mm-hmm.
in a painful way is the cause.
Right. Yeah, it's very clear. It's
yeah.
beautiful.
It is.
So is it like, I mean, so sometimes, you know, like, I go on a trek and then, you know, you reach the top and sometimes you feel, wow, you know, I did this, I could, you know, I climbed it. And then sometimes you just go there and you're like, you know, wow, this is just amazing.
Uh-huh.
So you don't, you're not thinking about your achievement at that point. You're just sort of experiencing what you see. So is that the distinction?
Yeah, but you can go up to climb the mountain and both experience, you know, kind of a joy of having been able to climb the mountain and all of that. But the ahankar is what happens when you say, I am so great because I climbed
right.
it.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
right.
But you might say, you know, recognize Ishvara, how great Ishvara is.
To sort of let me come up.
Yeah, your body, your strength, that you could do such a thing, it's all gratitude. Instead of ahankara, for your glories, vibhutis, it's gratitude and wonder.
Mm.
You know, it, the ahankara becomes given over to Ishvara. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing how the million different ways one can look at the same thing, no? Every
yeah.
time we look at the same thing, but we look at it from this little different angle.
Yeah.
It's just infinite possibilities.
Yeah, that's right. Clarity. Sometimes Swami likens Vedanta to painting a picture.
Mm-hmm.
And first, you know, you start with these broad strokes.
Mm-hmm.
And then you put fill in a little bit more detail here and here and there.
Mm-hmm.
And then more and more and more. And then more and 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 more. It goes on and on and on, the clarity, the level of clarity. I used to experience that when I was at the course, you know. I would be just brought to tears, actually, that Swamiji would go even another level. No, when I was in, a student, not that I'm still a student, but years ago, and, you know, and he was,
Get even better, huh?
Even more deeper, another layer into making that clear, you know, nuancing
yeah.
it. It goes on and on and on, just unbelievable. That's how it is.
Mm.
You know, and we're teaching and going on, this and that. There's just another, some other little thing comes.
Mm-hmm.
Some more, little more clarity here and there and here and there. That should, hopefully that's it.
It's like grace, huh? Grace.
Grace, yeah.
Grace and action.
Grace in action. Well done. All right, let's go to the night.